Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast. We're hosted by Kendall and Jackie. And here we talk about everything, well, horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and also the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, the tropes, and new episodes are launched every Monday.
And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Terra Nova Pod. And more importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo. Hello, everyone. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Yeah, spice it up.
Yeah, I could tell. I'm actually really excited because, yeah, it's a film I haven't seen. And I already know on the other end, Kendall is like internally thinking of ways on how to roast me for a movie he's seen that I've never seen because I'm always judging him. So
actually, I've never seen this movie either.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen this film ever. At least I don't think I have. I've seen maybe clips of it, but I don't recall ever watching this movie.
Yeah, see, I thought you watched it because I feel like I ever told you, oh, I've never seen it. You'd be like, wait, you've never seen this? It's like, just like how I get on you about not seeing certain movies. Psycho, Interview the Vampire.
Attack the Block.
Fine.
Yeah. Fine. You didn't even know you needed that in your life. I brought that to your life.
Yeah, it was really good. Like, wow. It was really, again, like, I watched it with my boyfriend and he literally saved it in his Amazon cart to own it. That's how much he loved it. He was just like, I'm owning this movie. It's a great movie.
Smart man. Smart man.
Yes. But this one is really interesting because I watched the series since I was a child, you know, back when it used to air. At times when I was supposed to be sleeping, but I watched it anyway. I feel like everybody did that. And it's been on the air for so many years. And I forgot it made movies. But yeah, we're going to be talking about Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight.
Dum, dum, dum.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah, Tales from the Crypt. Tell you the truth, I didn't know it came out in like 1989, like which was the year I was born. I had no idea.
Yeah, me either. Like, I've only... No, because I was just saying that how I'm the same. I had no idea it's been around since that long. Well, TV-wise. The comic has been around longer than that. But, yeah, because I watched it in the 90s, you know, as a kid. So, mm-hmm. I thought it was a 90s show, you know?
Same. I thought the same thing. Hold on. When did the comic come out now that I think about it? Like, how long?
I think the 70s it was out.
Damn.
Because... It's been around for a while, the comics. And I know, because when I was reading like certain articles preparing for this podcast, they were saying how like they really tried to make the show really like look like it came out of the comics. So it came out, wow, 1950. So from 1950 to 1955,
wow,
that's the comics, yeah, because of the Crypt comics. That's amazing.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then when they adapted to the TV series that used to air, you know, HBO late at night, they really tried to bring a lot of those stories into life that was from the comic. They tried to make it as close as it was to the comic as they can, which is pretty cool because, like, it's hard to do that sometimes. You know, we see it in, like, movies when they adapt something from a comic. But for this one, yeah, they really tried to make it close to it as much as.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had no idea. I know initially, I don't think I found out until years, years later that it was even based off a comic. I had no idea. I mainly caught, same, like, for the most part, the reruns on, like, Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know either until years later as well. It kind of reminds me of Stephen King's Creepshow, because that was also based on a comic.
Yeah, I still haven't watched Creepshow yet.
I barely remember it. Like, I feel like I watched it, but I don't remember it, because it's so long ago. I watched so many things as a kid that I wasn't supposed to, but I did anyway.
Well, this show, in a lot of ways, is one that no one, you shouldn't watch as a kid. I watched it with my dad, but I remember always mainly hiding my face during the intro, because the intro was, like, for as iconic as it is, it was creepy as fuck. Walking through the house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Crypt Creeper was so creepy. And it's funny, because, like, I've always had a fear of skeletons. I don't know why, but I've always been terrified of skeletons. And the Crypt Keeper used to really creep me out. You know, like, he looks like, I mean, he essentially is a zombie, you know?
Yeah.
Ghoul. Yeah, and, you know, like, he looks all, like, decomposed with his high-pitched voice, you know? but he was very entertaining.
Yeah, the character of the Crypt Keeper itself, like, so iconic and just really toes the line so perfectly of, like, being scary and being funny and charismatic, which is really weird considering what he looks like. Like, you would have never thought that he could be funny, but he cracks jokes and all that. He cracks jokes about all of the stories that he tells, and it's just a really, really unique way, in my opinion, to do, like, an anthology. Like, it's always, people talk about horror anthologies and, like, some of the best ever do it, and it's just a really unique format for these kind of stories that they can tell from episode to episode or movie to movie, which is just really, it's just dope. I just really like it. Crypt Keeper is really interesting of a character. Like, is he too scary for kids? I would say yes. But at the same time, he's not exactly, like, doing the killing or, like, anything crazy like that. It's more like almost like an Alfred Hitchcock or Twilight Zone kind of, like, he's the host and you're here for the ride versus him directly, like, killing people in the stories, which is really, I think that's part of the reason why maybe the intro only scared me, but the Crypt Keeper itself didn't scare me too much because I was like, oh, he's just a storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was funny how he, like, narrowed you into the story. Like, he'll start off with, like, some clever quip, and then he'll be like, oh, then, you know, this person wasn't so lucky, and start laughing about it, and then you go right into the story.
Yeah, it's just a really, really good format that works.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think he had two different voices who betrayed him. Because, I mean, it's essentially a puppet. You know, they use puppetry to have him pop up of his grave and talk. But yeah, I believe he had two different voices. Ralph Richardson and John Kasser did the voice of the Crypt Keeper. But it's what made it so iconic. And it's funny for this movie because in the beginning you see him, but he's the director, so it's kind of like a movie within a movie.
Yeah.
And I love how he's just like, oh, you know, grab your vomit bags, you know, it's fright camera action. And I was just like, I love that.
Yeah, like, he's such a charismatic character. Like, the funny and the charisma is almost overriding the creepy. It's just, he looks really creepy, but his outward actions are, like, really funny. Which makes him so damn entertaining. Like, that was hilarious. Even, like, I think they said for the scene at the beginning where he kind of runs, we'll get into the summary in a bit, but, like, the scene at the beginning when they kind of showed the Crypt Keeper kind of run on set, it was kind of like screaming crazy. They said he was like an actual actor and kind of like CGI the face on him.
Yeah, you could tell too. You could tell watching it now. I was just like, yeah, you could tell the CGI. Like, yeah, it's so, like, if this was made today, you would not be able to tell.
But oh yeah, word, technology's come so
it
far.
It was kind of obvious.
It's the 90s, yo. What do you expect?
True.
But I guess we can get into the actual story that he's telling this time. This is one of the more iconic stories, I guess you could say, in some ways, or even sometimes underappreciated stories of Tales from the Crypt. Because, like I said, even though I'm a big fan of the franchise itself, and I've seen, from what I recall, most of the movies, most of the episodes, this isn't one story in particular that I remember. It was definitely highlighted in that documentary, Horror Noir. They talk about Jada Pinkett's role in it, and kind of how, like, the token trope has kind of was flipped and kind of used really well in this film. And that said, here's the simple summary.
I have my popcorn ready.
Just like that Michael Jackson meme?
Yes.
So, all right, here's a story, the best way I can explain it. Tales from the Crypt, so you know there's monsters and crazy shit involved. So, there is this guy named Breaker being chased by this demon that they call the Collector, and he is trying to get this item from him, this key. This key is essentially supposed to be one of the last keys that will let evil basically take over the universe. There are 7 keys total, and bad guys have 6, and they want to get the last one. This main character, Breaker, you're not aware of any of this at the time. He's just being pursued by this guy, who looks kind of like a cop. So you assume he's being chased by the police because he's a criminal of some sort. He gets away. He finds this inn that you find out later on turns out to be an old church. And he tries to stay there for the night, hoping to kind of get away from his pursuer. Everyone in this fucking inn is a character. Whether it's the lady who runs it, I forgot the actress's name. But she's really awesome. Jada Pinkett Smith is there. She works there as like a worker. There's a prostitute there who attempts to be there at night. There's her abusive boyfriend. There's people who just kind of hang out there. There's like the town drunk guy who kind of hangs there. This place is just full of characters. And the collector that was pursuing the guy, he comes in there with the police because they stumble upon him. And they're like, hey, we'll help you catch this guy who supposedly is out here doing all this wrong. Turns out the collector, quote unquote, is the actual bad guy. And he's trying to get this key back from the character Breaker, who in this key supposedly has like the blood of saints inside of it and can repel demons. And that is the reason why he's trying to get the key itself, but he wants to get rid of the blood that is inside the key as well, so that can no longer be used against him. And the one thing that I have to mention, aside from the ensemble that is really, really awesome, and I'll run off some of the names because the cast for this movie is kind of crazy. So obviously you have the Crypt Keeper, John Cusack. You have Billy Zane playing the collector, which we're going to talk about him because he was hilarious. We have William Sadler, who plays Breaker, Guy on the Run. Jada Pinkett Smith plays Geraldine. Brenda Bake, playing Cordelia. CCH Pounder, that's her name, who I was thinking of. Yep, she plays Irene. Dick Miller plays Uncle Willie. Thomas Hayden Church plays Roach. Like, this cast, I can just go on and on. The cast is pretty, pretty insane for this movie. Almost everyone here is famous for the most part. And it's really, really good cast overall. And it just kind of essentially becomes the movie Assault on Precinct 13, as some people say, mixed with Evil Dead, because all of the characters end up stuck inside of this end that you later find out is a church, used to be a church, and they are trying to stay alive against a collector who is using demons and all kinds of trickery and mind games to get inside and get the key back. So it's really, really, really interesting. That's the skinny of it. And at the end of the movie, you find out Jada Pinkett Smith is the chosen one. So we'll get into the details of it, but that's like the quickest summary I can get for this film. So, first impressions. Demon shit. Should Jackie love be your first time seeing it?
First of all, Billy Zane. That man is so known for playing every bad guy known to man. Like, I have never seen him not play a bad guy. Like, he's one of those actors. It's like, oh my god, like Gary Oldman.
Yep.
Always playing the bad guy. I've never seen him not play a civil person before. And it's funny how in a documentary that they said that how like this was the first film people realized Billy Zane's actually bald. So apparently in previous movies he wore wigs and whatnot because no one knew that he was actually bald. So that's interesting. And yeah, to touch upon when you said the how the cast, yeah, this was a full blown cast. Like, there is a big name in this whole entire movie. There is no one in this movie that we did not know. And I mean, Dick Miller. The moment it's funny how when I saw Dick Miller and he was the drunk guy, and I'm just like, oh my god, he's always the drunken guy who's always saying some weird facts or truth to people. Like, I'm surprised he didn't say gremlins. But I just love his character. So I love that they always typecast him as the drunken guy. Always. It's so funny. But yeah, first impressions, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. And it's funny because a lot of critics has dubbed this movie one of the best out of all the Tales of the Crypt movies. Like, this is by far the best one. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because they actually did have a film before this, I believe in the 70s or 80s. And that didn't do as well as this one. And I think it does have to do with the writing and like the cast, the director, and whatnot. And this movie was in limbo for a while. Like, it was really in limbo for before it was made. So yeah, good job. Like, I'm just very impressed with it. It was, you know, Ernest Dickerson did a really good job with this film.
Yes, Ernest Dickerson, the man who made Juice.
Mm-hmm. And Bones.
Yeah, which we'll definitely do at some point.
What about you? What are your first?
I am in a similar boat, having never seen the film before, and only, at least not that I recall, and just only knowing a bit about it from like the Horror Nara documentary. I enjoyed it. It was, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, like the first maybe 10 to 15 minutes, I was kind of like, what? Because I had no idea what the movie was actually about. So I was just like, what is this mm-hmm. about? Like, I was really curious around trying to figure out what the plot was. But once I got past trying to like predict what was coming next, I pretty much enjoyed the movie overall. The characters were bonky, kind of wonky and kind of weird, as you kind of expect from Tales from the Crypt. Because I don't know if everyone likes to admit it, but Tales from the Crypt is definitely horror and comedy. It's not a full-blown terror fest. Like it's horror to the point of, it's horror to the point of scary, but also horror to the point of entertaining. And that's what I think really separates Tales from the Crypt from a lot of other horror franchises. It's still kind of fun and not, it doesn't take itself so seriously that it's like a dark and grim tale. It's more so like it can have dark humor more than anything else. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it overall. It was pretty interesting. I didn't know the film was going to be pretty much them locked in one location for a big part of it. I had no idea about that. But I do have to say, Billy Zane cracked me up the entire fucking movie. Whenever I was trying to figure out, like, when I was, like, sitting there really kind of trying to think about, like, where's this plot actually going, he filled in the gaps perfectly for me because he was doing such odd shit that I almost forgot that I was trying to figure out the plot. I was just like, yo, what is he doing? Like, it was just really weird. Like, when he first finally, you know, revealed himself and then punched the cop's head, he put his fist through the cop's head, which was like, that's a what the fuck moment. And everyone was like, oh my God. And he's just kind of like shaking the guy's head, like off his arm trying. He's like, ah, this is annoying. And he just flicks it at the other cop. He's like, heads up. I was like, hold on, what? Like, just doing cracking jokes. And then like from that point forward, everything he said was just hilarious. Like even when they kind of kicked him out, when he jumped out the window briefly after touching the blood, and he jumped out the window. And he was just like, this is annoying. You could just give it to me and we could just move on. But whatever, this place is condemned now. And then he just kind of starts summoning demons and stuff. The dude was interesting. Even the way he was tempting everybody was like really funny. He played a role in like everyone's mind games. It was interesting. Yeah, it was better than I thought it would be. Especially, you know, it's the 90s. It's easy to judge the 90s harshly because we have so much better technology now. But it was fairly good. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I like how they really focused a lot on practical effects. You know, they could have done so much for that thing. They could have done so much CGI if they wanted to, because a lot of movies back then tried to do all that.
Yeah.
But it looked like PS2 graphics when they did.
If that.
But I like how they, yeah. But I like how they really kept it with practical effects. You know, nothing was really CGI. I mean, just the seal, you know, whenever, you know, Breaker will pour the Saint's blood and will steal up certain entrances. That's the only CGI we would see. And the eyes. Whenever he would shoot them in the eyes and, you know, their souls will be released. But yeah. Other than that, a lot of it was just practical effects. And I really enjoy, because again, like, I love practical effects. Like, I love it. Like, I just enjoy it so much. And it added a lot to it, too. Because if you think about it, you know, Tales of the Crypt, the series, also had a lot of practical effects with a lot of their episodes. So I like how they kept that the same, you know. I mean, they did have, you know, other Tales of the Crypt movies later on, which they did do a lot of CGI stuff that apparently was really bad. But I think that's why this one was just, like, so well. And, yeah, I like how they compared it with, you know, what is it, the Evil Dead. Because that, too, also had practical effects, and it was also, like, comedy horror and so ridiculous. And yeah, I just loved it. That's the one thing I liked about it. I mean, there's still a lot of things I liked about it, but that was the one thing that made me go, wow, this is so good. The practical effects.
Yeah, the effects are really dope. The demons that he summoned looked really cool. Kind of reminded me a little bit of like From Dusk to Dawn. Wouldn't be surprised if it was From Dusk to Dawn was like inspired very much so, because the demons looked kind of like the crazy vampires in that one. So very like kind
they
of
were
ugly and just like wrangled and mangled. It was really cool.
Yeah, they were actually, because I think at the time, like I said, like this movie was like in production hell for a while, and the script, I think they tried to give it to Tarantino, but at the time him and Robert was doing Dusk for Dawn. So they had to take it elsewhere, and in a sense it kind of was a bit, because the way they looked, it was resembling like what Robert and Tarantino did with Dusk for Dawn. But yeah, it's, and I like how they were all different. Because whenever you see like some weird demonic movie, you know, they always look the same. They always look like all ears, wings, whatever. But I like how they all were different. They all didn't look the same. You know, that's what I liked about them, the demons. I also like how when Roach, was it Roach? No, it was one of the cops was trying to shoot the demon. Was it? No, it was Wally. He kept trying to shoot the demon who was hurting Cordelia. And he kept shooting at the top of his head, and Demon just laughed at him. He just looked at him and laughed at him, like, wow, really? I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, the demons were dope. I loved the mind games aspect of it. He was like, he would tempt them. It was actually, it was kind of reminding me of Sweet Home, because I've been watching Sweet Home lately. So I was kind of putting that in my brain a little bit. I was like, I probably got inspired by this. But I liked that the collector was tempting them. That was really cool. Where he would like go into their minds and kind of offer to give them the things that they want the most. And essentially they would exchange their soul for it. So it was like his way of getting past the barrier that was created by that blood. It was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the moment when he was tempting Cordelia, I was just like, nah, this is it. This is it. It's how he's going to get through. And then, yeah, it was interesting how like he knew their desires. You know, but I love Irene's character, because when he tried to tempt her, she was just like, nah, I'm not going to fall for that. I'm not falling for that.
Yeah, Irene was playing that shit. I love when she took her nubbed arm and pointed. He was like, is that a yes? She was like, hell no.
That's a middle finger. I'm flipping you off.
Yeah. Like, took my arm, motherfucker. It was interesting. It was definitely not, it wasn't what I didn't know what to expect with this film, but what I got was not what I expected at all. I didn't expect this whole guardian backstory thing with Breakser, where he's like essentially this guardian of the key, and the key has like, it's not only like the key that could essentially destroy mankind, but it's also a chamber that like at one point held like Jesus's blood, which could be used to repel demons. Like that backstory was a little weird, but I was like, that's an interesting idea. It's an interesting concept. So that part I kind of liked it. What did you think about that idea?
When I saw when they were showing flashbacks of like the crucifixion, when he first got crucified, and there was that purse that one of those Hebrews was like grabbing the thing to get his blood, my first initial thought was like, is that Judas? Which is weird, because I mean, Judas dies anyway. He kills himself after what he did. But I was just like, that's probably one of his followers that, you know, survived. And he was probably the first guardian, I guess, you know. And yeah, I thought that was interesting too, and how they live forever. They don't die unless the blood runs out, or they are, you know, the collector finds them and kills them, and they have to pass it on to whoever's next to them. And I thought that was really interesting as well, because like every time when they play flashback to that scene, I kept thinking like, wait, is Breakser one of the apostles? Like, is he one of the his followers? Like, what? But then you see that how he was, I think, the fifth or the fourth holder of it. And yeah, so I thought that was really interesting, because I've never seen that before either, when it comes to the whole like good versus bad type of scenario using the blood. You know, that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think like when I was watching, I took a note. I was like, is he Jesus? I was like, is Jesus using Jesus' blood? Like, is this what we're doing? It's a little crazy of a concept, but all right, let's see where it goes from here. Like, it's a little weird, but all right, let's see what's happening. Yeah, super unique concept, just kind of weird in the first few seconds, because they gave it to you piece by piece over the course of the film. So you're kind of like, oh, I'm not sure what this is exactly leading to, but yeah, it shows you that it was the blood was passed to him, which is why he's the guardian now. And yeah, it's interesting. Really, really, really unique idea. Yeah, super unique idea. Definitely not something I would have thought of.
Yeah. And I like how when everybody was like kind of being killed off, and it was only him and, you know, Geraldine left, and they had asked him like, what happens if the blood fills up? You know, he just tells them, oh, that's it, it's over. But he told her like, it gets filled up by the holder, the previous holder, their blood fills it, because they're basically a saint or whatever. And yeah. I thought that was really interesting too, because you do wonder like, how does Jesus's blood last all those years? Like, they're using it every time to seal stuff. What? So I like how it was interesting how he didn't tell the rest of the crew how it gets refilled, but he told her. You know, I found that really interesting. I guess in a way it was just like, well, I'm dying, so you're the next in line type of stuff, you know?
Yeah, it was exactly that, because I mean, even at the end, he says, like, I came here because I knew you were the next person. Like, how he foresees that, I'm sure, is some part of, like, having the abilities in which he has, like, he could, like, discover a good character, I guess. But that was what he told her. He was like, I knew you were going to be, like, that you were the next chosen one. So that's part of the reason I even came here, which is really interesting, because out of everybody in the crew, if you really look at him, you have a drunk, a sex worker, prostitute, whichever term you want to use. Sex worker, I guess. Like, you have sex worker, you have a drunk, you have, what else? Abusive dude.
The abuser, yeah.
Geraldine, she was a thief. You have that. You kind of, in a way, almost have like the all of the sins, pretty much. So I think that was what they were going for. So it's kind of funny that they would pick the thief out of everyone to kind of be the one that ends up being the chosen one. It's funny because it's like on one part, like when they talked to her a little bit, because Irene was getting on her and she was like, I'm the only one keeping her out of trouble. Like, I'm gonna give her a job, give her something to do. It's like, otherwise she'd probably be back in jail or something. And, you know, Breaker acts like, hey, what did you do? He's like, I'm not judging, I'm just asking. And she's like, oh, I used to steal stuff. That's really it. I thought she would be like the one to like maybe steal the key from him before he even knew or something to kind of show her skills. But no, I didn't even need to do that. She's like, that moment didn't even have to come, which is pretty cool.
And it's interesting too when he mentioned how like he was always the one, because in the beginning, when he first goes into the motel, he just stares at her. The moment she comes downstairs, he just looks and just stares at her, like a long stare.
Yeah.
And they were just like, okay. So that could have been like an indication too, like, okay, that's she's definitely gonna be someone important.
For sure, it is Jada Pinkett.
That is true. And about Jada Pinkett, there was an article that said that how originally one of the writers, he wanted Cameron Diaz to play Geraldine, and Ernest Dickerson fought to get Jada Pinkett Smith because he was just like, no, it has to be her. And reading all these articles about the process of this movie, it just made me hate the producers and executives, because when they were thinking about who to play this role, and when Ernest first brought up Jada Pinkett Smith, one of the writers, Joel Silverman, the first thing he asked was just like, okay, but does she have big breasts? Like, what does that have to do with anything? What? Like, ugh. But I'm glad that he fought for her, because she did an amazing job, and it was nice to see someone non-white be the final girl for once. Well, we've seen it before, but it was just nice.
Yeah.
You know, to have that satisfying moment where she fights, and she really was really smart. She was super smart, especially the ending with the bus. I was just like, that's a smart ass girl. I'll do the same thing.
Yeah, black final girl in the 90s. That's dope. That's dope. I'm sure more films like that exist. Of course, nowadays, but like in the 90s, you probably only had like a few to pick from. So yeah, it's dope. Mm-hmm. To go back to with that crazy executive thing, and even just some of the other stuff that they were calling out about, some of the behind the scenes stuff towards making a film, between the comment about Jada Pinkett's breast or the comment about how they thought that the demon should essentially get to rape her or whatever, which is like crazy. The director was like, yo, this is the shit you deal with these executives. Like, you have no idea the level of like craziness you have to deal with in these meetings when people have like the weirdest feedback. And well, the Cameron Diaz part, I don't mind too much, because I'm like, well, these people are actors, right? Like, an actor should be able to play the role that you give them from film to film. So I don't want to necessarily say, well, she could only be a heartthrob or she could only be that, because we've seen characters go beyond that. So I'm not going to criticize her artistic abilities. But what I will say, man, the creative process can be something else. I tell you, the creative process can be something else. And just even thinking about it, between some of the stuff that he said he dealt with for this film, I'm thinking of just other films, not even just in my own professional life, which I have tons of examples of that. But like, and just like the movie making world, I think of a film like I think of like Sonic, right? Remember when the first design for Sonic came out and everybody lost their shit?
Yeah, I really felt bad for the animators, because the animators and the director had told the executives, if this does not look good. And they were just like, no, just bring it out. And I felt so bad that they had to go back to work, redo everything, do overtime, complete this whole project from start to ending, and redo it, because they were just like, okay, yeah, we made a mistake. Like, I felt so bad for them, and so unappreciated, because animators work a lot. They work their ass off of things, and I really hope they got paid double for what they did.
Exactly. That was my thinking as well in that particular situation, because I was like, being a creative of any sort, in my opinion, and the business of creative is just different. Like, being creative and the business of being of creative is, there are just two drastically different worlds, because they should be in a way, but at the same time, there's weird things that kind of happen, like from people's egos to how things work. From that Sonic example specifically, to what you said, when everybody was mad when it came out immediately and they were like, yo, the Sonic looks terrible, this is insane, like, what is going on? Me and everyone I know who was creative of any sort were like, I can bet cash money, I bet my house if I had to, that it is not the animator's fault that that character looks the way they looks in that trailer. Like, everyone who has any creative experience is 100% knowing that. We were like, nah, because when you work on projects of any sort that's based on a source material, you reference a source material. Sonic has had cartoons. He's had all of these other things. And you can say this for Resident Evil and a bunch of other things. There are reference points that you pull to. And you go, okay, we know what these characters look like. We know what they need to be. But when some executive guy walks in the door, and I'm not saying all executives make the worst decisions creatively or aren't creative, but if you have a guy walk in the door who has the final say and he just goes, no, I don't want that. Give me this instead. And then you are in turn punished for it, as you said, with the extra overtime, whether it's the movie is bad or even just from the trailer, which was really bad in that case, led to that. That's tough. That's really tough on the creative part. Because you could have really good reasons, but when you don't, when the person who has final say is like, no, I want this, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I can only, him dealing with that with this film, like, come on, what type of comment is, oh, does Jada Pinkett have big titties? Like, what does that have to do with the film itself? But looking at the film, there was a lot of nudity. It was a lot.
Yeah, and it is weird. It is really weird because, again, I guess because they want to try to make it similar to the comic, but it's just like, so what? You know, like, as long as the story's accurate, fine. If the characters look a different way, so what? Like, why do you care? You know, it's just really ridiculous. And to kind of go back to the whole thing with when they kind of wanted Geraldine to be raped in that scene, which is the scene when he's first tempting her, you know, and she's in her underwear, they're dancing and whatever. I just want to say that I love how both Ernest and Joe fought to keep that out of the movie. Like, I love that how they were just like, we're not doing this. And I love when they first brought it up to Billy Zane and the manager of Jada Pinkett Smith. And they were all just like, listen, we got your back. We're not going to have that scene be done. And everybody in the cast was just like, we're against this. We're not going to have it done. And they were able to not get it done. And
yeah,
I think that was cool and dope. Because, yeah, because, like, when you're, like you said, being the creative versus being the creator is very different. Because if you say, if your boss says, hey, do this and that, and if you're just like, I don't know, I'm not sure, you do get punished for that. You get rubber-banded, you get fired for it. Or just like, oh, you know, you get labeled as in someone difficult to work with. And I love how they stood their ground for that. And in exchange, they changed it for the scene where he has a fire penis.
That was funny.
That's what they changed it for. Yeah, and they loved it. They were like, oh, this is cool. And then Ernest was just like, well, it was weird, but they loved it. So, hey, it was better than what they originally planned for. And I do like how they all stood their ground and was behind the director and writer's decision to not let that happen.
Same. I really like that too. And I honestly really like that they didn't even have to get Jada Pinkett involved to get it disapproved. Like, I'm sure that they mentioned, I'm sure somebody told her, like, what the situation was. But I like that they didn't even wait till it got to, like, her desk and her, and the script got in front of her, to for her to then have to fight for it and everybody to have to agree. They were already like, nah, we're not doing that. Before it even gets to that point, we're not even going to pretend that that's a thing. We're going to just kill us right now. Because that's the only way you really get things like that, in my opinion anyway. That's the only way you get things like that to really, like, stop. Is like, people got it. You can't wait till it gets on the quote-unquote victim's door to then go, okay, this ain't right. Like, you gotta recognize wrong and just go with it. And I'm not just saying wrong for the sake of saying wrong. Like, obviously, I made it clear in this podcast a million times, I don't like seeing rape scenes in any film. I don't care who's being raped, man, woman, I just don't want to see it. But even then, the director was very clear. He was like, this film, that's not sexual. Like, he tempts people, but, like, this, nothing about this is sexual. Like, he's just here to collect this key. There isn't anything sexual. He's not like an incubus or anything like that, or a succubus. Like, there's nothing sexual here. And then, like, they even said a few of the executives was like, I just don't get why she can't fuck the devil. And he was like, well, he's not the devil. And then also nothing about his interaction with her is truly sexual. It's just a temptation kind of thing. And yes, it's very weird. It's weird. But having been in those situations before myself creatively, like, not with films, but, like, on the graphic design side of things, I could totally understand his level of frustration, because I've been there so many times working with clients. You do something and then the client's like, I don't like this thing. You have all the reasoning that explains it, and the client's still like, well, change it to this. And then when it gets out in the world and people hate it, they're like, well, what happened? And you're like, well, I told you that wasn't a great idea. And then, but the biggest problem with it a lot of the times is that success leads to upward mobility for the person who made the final decision and not necessarily the creator. So because of that, people who and this is my theory, but people who don't consider themselves creative want to feel creative. So they need to have a level of input in things that are creative to feel like that they actually made it and they could point to it and be like, that was mm-hmm. me. And I think that's why a lot of problems like that happen. That was just their way of throwing in something that they thought would make the film better. And that was their idea. I'm sure that was a big part of it. They didn't even want her. They didn't want Jada Pinkett to begin with. So I'm sure they wanted something that felt like theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it is true. Like, I've dealt with that too before with clients. It's kind of annoying. But it's just like, it's what you wanted. That's my response to it. It's like, that's what you wanted. So there you go. Don't complain to me. It's what you wanted. But I am glad, though, at least for them, like, they fought for that. And it's interesting because, like, when we saw the documentary of, Black Noir, they had mentioned how so many, like, Black directors and writers had to deal with that, what Ernest dealt with. You know, when you're with, like, white executives, yeah, you got to deal with that and fight for things that they're just not going to give everything, you same. Until they're finally just, like, yeah, and then until they're finally just, like, hands up, okay, fine, we'll give you what you want. You know, it's like, it's crazy. Unnecessary, too. Like, it shouldn't have to take so many things, you know? And then for this situation, again, thankfully, he had the whole cast, you know, behind his back. You know, Billy yeah. Zane and everybody else was just like, this is not going to happen. Because Billy Zane also was just like, I'm not doing that. I will not do that.
Yeah, he made the right decision. Luckily, it panned out well, and we got a really fun movie.
Yeah. Again, it's funny that Billy Zane always plays the villain. Crazy.
I always think of him as the dude from, like, The Mummy. That's one of my favorite movies as well. That's always the first thing that comes to mind mm-hmm. when I think of him is The Mummy. He was so damn good in The Mummy.
I love that movie. Yeah. And again, like, he's never once not played a villain. I don't remember any film that he's just a normal Joe that isn't conniving or deceiving. Like, I don't recall any film. There probably is one, but every other film I've seen him in, he's always the villain. And it's probably because he's such a nice guy. And you know how they say, like, how nice guys like to play the assholes in movies? Because it allows them to be the jerks they want to be, but they can't be or something. Like, yeah. So many people have said that when they choose roles like that. So that's probably why he likes choosing those roles. Or maybe his agent is just like, hey, I got a role you might like. It's a bad guy.
I'm sure that's a part of it. A big part of being able to be evil or play evil is, like, not feeling bad for just screwing people over. Like, actually enjoying mm-hmm. it. Like, yeah. Even when Roach stole the key and went to give it to him, he was like, so, all right, man, you're just not going to kill me, right? He was like, how about the other people? I don't really care if you kill them, but do your thing. But, like, you're just not going to kill me. He was like, yeah, sure, no problem. They made a deal, and then he walked up. He was like, I lied, man, and just killed him. He could have let him go. He's just like, nah.
I couldn't stand Roach. Yeah, I was happy when Roach died. He was so annoying and obnoxious. I'm not surprised to see Jada Pinkett Smith do her first horror movie, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, why do you say that?
Well, because, I mean, if you think about, I don't know if you know that she used to be in a metal group. Like, she used to be in a metal band, like a punk metal band.
Oh, so, yeah.
She's really into all that dark shit. So I'm not surprised. She must have been like, yeah, when they were like, hey, you want to do this role? Because she's a nerd in real life. Like, she is a nerd in real life. She's into all that gothic dark shit. And I'm just like, I'm here for it. You know, I listened to her band, too, when they were a thing. And I listened to their songs. So I'm not surprised. It definitely fit her. And I guess, in a way, like, this kind of added to her actor's resume as well, of all the different roles she can do.
Jada Pinkett Smith, she's a great, great, great actress. Been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, and she's also very versatile because she can do anything. You know, she could do comedy, you know, with the, what was it? The film she did with Eddie Murphy.
Nutty Professor.
Yes, you know, she was in the first film. So she could be funny. She could be, you know, serious. She could do this, you know, horror. I don't know if she's ever been in an action film. She probably has been in an action film. I just don't remember. But she's been in everything, you know? And it's nice it's good to be that versatile. Because, again, like you mentioned with the Cameron Diaz thing when they wanted her, like, you don't want to be typecast. And for a while, Cameron Diaz was typecast, you know, because of her role in mm-hmm. Mask. And so it's nice that she's not one of them, like Jada. Like, she could do anything and be in everything.
Yep. And you definitely forgot that Jada was in The Matrix.
Same action. Action film.
She does everything.
And she kicked ass, too. She was like, ho, ho, ho. I was like, oh, look at Jada. She knows how to fight.
Yeah. The end of this film was dope. I really liked it. Like, the final confrontation she had with Collector. That was pretty dope. I liked that. Like, she was kind of using the blood in different ways. That was pretty good.
I know. That was so clever. Like, she covered her body in it so he couldn't touch her. And then she swallowed. Like, she swallowed it and spit it in his mouth. And I was like, spit in his face. I was like, yo, that's smart. Again, it's funny because, like, that's what this guy said, Breaker. He was just like, you're the one. You're the chosen one. He was just like, I can't do this. He's like, no, you are the one. Because she was so smart. Especially in the ending when, like, you know, she goes in the bus. She's going to travel. And I like how when she got on, she put the blood and the door seal. You know, so it seals the door, seals the bus. And I love when the new collector came. And he was just like, I'll get the next one. Because that was so clever. That was mad smart.
Yeah, that was really cool. This movie is definitely, like, I don't know. Do we call it underrated at this point? Like, how would you rate this movie? Is it underrated or underappreciated? What would you say?
I don't know. I guess maybe both in a sense, but not really. Because again, like, out of all the Tales of the Crypt films that were released, this is the one that gets up as the best one out of all of them. And I think there's 5 films in total. And yeah, again, I've only ever seen that how this one is the best one. Out of them, like, it was greatly made, it had the great cast, the story. It had a mixture of everything, of horror and comedy, just like the series. So, I don't know. I guess maybe, yeah, a little bit of both.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I definitely remember when I used to put Tales from the Crypt movies on TV. The one I felt like that was always on TV was the vampire one. What was that, like, Bordelia of Blood? I think that was the name of
it? Yeah, that one I used to always see. Yeah, it was always on. I guess because it was like more. I forgot who was in that film. That it's probably the reason why they was aired a lot. But yeah, it was just. Again, like, I've only heard of this one because of the documentary we saw. So I never really watched it. And I guess, yeah, it is very unappreciated and underrated. And I could see why critics have said that how this is dubbed as the best one out of all the 5 films that were released. That, you know, Tales of the Crypt had come out with.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'm going to have to add this one into my horror rotation. This is actually pretty good. Surprisingly better than I remember, and definitely better than a few other stories I remember from Tales from the Crypt.
Mm-hmm. And I also like how the ending, the new collector was whistling the jingle of the series.
Yeah, he's whistling the theme song. That was so dope. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. That was great. I loved how they ended it with, like, after the story was over, they kind of did, like, a Hollywood red carpet premiere with the Crypt Keeper. That was dope.
Yeah. It was so funny. He was just like, well, I hope you got to know that Geraldine lived a happy living life.
Yeah, so good. So good. So good. I don't have an explanation as to why there were so many booby shots, but I'm guessing it was just the 90s. That's all I got. Yeah. That's all I got. It is what it is, though. It was good, though. It was a good movie overall, and I enjoyed it very much. I'm definitely going to revisit that in the future.
Yeah, and again, Jada Pinkett Smith, final girl.
Yep, final girl. Final girl, we all need it. So, before we get up out of here, I want to remind you guys again, definitely follow us on Instagram if you aren't. Feel free to hop in the DMs and say hello if you want to just give us a compliment, or if you even want to say we suck, that's cool, too. We'll laugh at it. I ain't even going to delete it. We'll just laugh at it.
If you ever tell me we suck, I'll just take that as in, look, Kendall, they said you suck.
That is what Jackie would say. She'd text me and be like, yo, they said you trash. They like me, though. So, yeah, if you're not following us already on Instagram, feel free to turn over pod on Instagram. Definitely say hello. Come through. Feel free to recommend movies or even just talk about movies or ask to be a guest.
Yeah. And also, you know, yeah. We have a Facebook. We have a Facebook group, guys. So if you want to join our group, join.
Yeah, feel free to. Feel free to hop in there. So. Today was Demon Night. It's dope. Mm-hmm. We got a last story coming up for the Black History Month. We're going to do Aries. I know we usually don't do previews, but in this case, I'll do it because I know we actually going to do it. We're going to do the Netflix show Aries. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Jackie's opinion on that one because that's going to be a fun way to Black History Month. That's going to be a good one.
I'm trusting you, but also I'm scared.
We'll see. So, I'll let you get the last one.
Ooh, wee you. Ghost goodbye.